And I remember at the time, what I feared most was basic training. I honestly didn't fear death. For one thing, anybody with a brain would know that somebody who types 80 to 100 words per minute was never going to be on the front lines anywhere. I was going to be in some office somewhere typing up some general's orders or something like that. My chances of actually being a grunt soldier in danger of losing life and limb in Vietnam were nil. But what I dreaded was basic training. I was not an athletic person. All of basic training, no matter what branch of the service you were going into, was going to be about climbing, you know, ropes and going over obstacles and ducking under bullets. And I didn't mind the ducking under bullets, wasn't afraid of getting dirty. But the second I would have to climb up a rope hand over hand or chin myself, I had never been able to do a chin-up in my life. I was not strong. And I wasn't fat, but I was soft-bodied and had some extra weight. It was just not, you know, the military was not something that I looked forward to. So training itself was an object of dread for me personally. So with all of those thoughts in mind, my brother's experience with it, my dread of training, then I thought, okay, how do you turn this subject into a science fiction story? And I thought, okay, what if you're training for a future war, a war that will take place in space, a war where individual humans will go outside of ships and go from ship to ship in zero gravity? How do you train for that without losing soldiers? I mean, that's one of the, you know, when they do live ammunition training in the military, there's a danger that if somebody sticks his head up, he'll get machine gun bullets in it. And that sort of puts an end to the investment that they've placed in your training. And so I thought, what do you do about the danger of somebody drifting off into space and being lost in the thick of mock combat during training? So I thought, okay, what they need to do is train them in zero gravity, but in an enclosed space. And that's when I came up with the idea of battle school, of having a cubed space, about a football field on a side, in which you could engage in combat, mock combat, of course, and train to start thinking the way you would need to train, the way you need to think, rather, in order to succeed in zero gravity combat. Well, from there, it was a short step, and this was all still, of course, when I was 16, to realizing that it's not enough to protect them. You have to help them to think differently. And I had read Nordhoff and Hall's Bounty Trilogy as a junior high student and really loved it. It's a wonderful piece of history converted into a fictionalized account that really comes to life, especially for the young. I went on to read another book by Nordhoff and Hall, which was about World War I flying aces. And they talked about the training that these World War I pilots went through. There'd never been combat flying before. And they found out very quickly that one of the main ways that they lost pilots and planes, of course, was that the pilots thought only in the horizontal plane. They would look to the left, they'd look to the right, they'd even turn around and look behind them, and they'd find no enemies in view, and they'd think they were safe. The enemy that killed them would come from above, would come from out of the sun, would come from below them. And all of a sudden there'd be bullets flying and they'd have no idea where the bullets were coming from until, of course, they went down in flames. In space, the problem would be even more difficult because, of course, when you're flying an airplane, up and down still exist. They matter. But in space, there's not even an up and down. Every direction is up. Every direction is down. Every direction can be left or right depending on which way your body is twisted. So if you are thinking in any kind of terrestrial framework, any gravity-based framework, you'll be vulnerable to an enemy. You'll be thinking improperly. And so I thought one of the main things they have to do in zero-G is train them not to think like planet-bound people. Well, I thought that was a great idea. Battle school was going to be my science fiction story. But then I realized that I still had no story. All I had was a setting. And I had no idea who the story should be about, so the idea sat in the back of my mind for several years. I actually worked on another science fiction series that I had thought of. It became the Worthing Saga. I wrote several of those stories and did that in my teens before I went on my mission for the LDS Church to Brazil. And while I was in Brazil, I brought out this battle school idea again and tried to come up with a story, and I still didn't have one. It wasn't until years later, 1975, I was working as an editor at Brigham Young University Press, and I was running a theater company, which I discovered that you can have a hit play, in fact, a season of hit plays, and lose money hand over fist. And I was funding it all out of season ticket sales. I mean, literally, I went out and sold season tickets at $20 each. And I was almost the only person selling, and most of the ticket sales were mine. And that was our budget. That was our funding, was however much money we brought in. So the incredible thing is that we were really only a few hundred dollars in debt. But for me, you know, on a copy editor's salary, how in the world was I going to repay the few hundred dollars that we owed? So I realized I needed a supplemental income. And since I had utterly no skills whatsoever, I had no choice but either to take a job typing in the evenings, or make some money as a writer. I felt like as a playwright, I had talent, but they didn't pay you for that. I was losing money at that. So I tried my hand at fiction. And the first thing I did was dust off one of those Worthing stories that I had written before my mission. And I revised it, of course. I'd learned a little bit since then. And sent it off to Ben Bova at Analog. And he wrote back and said, I really like the way you write, but unfortunately the story is not science fiction, it's fantasy. But if you actually write a science fiction story, please send it to me. Well, at first I was outraged. How could he say that? The Worthing Saga is absolutely, definitely science fiction. But then I looked very closely and realized, of course, the story I sent him didn't include any of the surrounding information that let you know that it was on another planet, et cetera, et cetera. It just felt like a story about magic. And that was when I learned my rule, that the difference between science fiction and fantasy in this world is not any of the elaborate rules that you hear. The difference is simply this. Science fiction has rivets. Fantasy has trees. If you look at the covers of science fiction and fantasy books, you'll find that I'm right. There's some kind of sheet metal or plastic smooth surface, usually with rivets in it, and that makes it science fiction. And if instead you see a bunch of trees and people going in a woodsy, elvesy setting, then you know you're dealing with fantasy. And so by that definition, the Worthing story that I had sent to Ben Bova was absolutely fantasy. But I did have this idea for Battle School in the back of my mind. And now I was serious. I needed money. And even though science fiction short stories didn't pay much, they paid more than I had. And that was enough for me. I knew I wasn't going to be able to break into The New Yorker for bigger bucks or Playboy magazine or any of the other magazines at the time that paid in the thousands of dollars. My best hope was to sell at 5 cents a word a science fiction short story. So I dusted off the Battle School idea, and now was when I had the insight that made it a story. I thought, if you're going to try to train people to not think in a planet-bound way, then what you need to do is get them when they're really young. And as soon as I realized that the people inside the battle school, inside the battle room, were kids, it changed everything. And I knew who my character was. My character was going to be the kid that had the most promise for saving the world from an alien invasion. Now, that was in 75. And, of course, I wrote it then, sent it off to Ben Bova. He rejected it, told me that it was twice as long as it needed to be. I needed to cut it in half. I just saw no way to cut it in half and still have anything left that was worth publishing. The story was only 70 pages long, but at 35 pages, I just didn't see it working. So instead, I sent the story off to Jim Bain, who was then the editor at Galaxy magazine. Well, Jim, let's put this kindly. Jim was going through stories about at the rate that Heinz ketchup flows out of the bottle. And so it was months and months and months before he finally got around to reading the story. And when he did, he rejected it. And unlike Ben, he didn't say, I'd like a revision, send it back. He just said, no, it doesn't work. So I went back to Ben's letter, and now his letter was looking a lot better to me. And so I thought, okay, he doesn't really want me to cut it in half. What he wants me to do is make it feel shorter. So what I realized was I had too many battles. I had too many scenes that were battles because I was showing off the battle room. And it was distracting from the story of the character.